Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. John Poutzier is president of First Step, Inc., a consulting firm that specializes in workplace performance. A prolific and popular speaker, he is the author of Get Weird. Dave Baker is president and CEO of Human Capital Advisors, LLC, an HR consulting firm that specializes in turnkey HR solutions. And together, they are authors of a new book, The Everything HR Kit. Gentlemen, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you very much.
Managers are often on the front lines of human resource issues, dealing with the problems, legal requirements, paperwork, and other strings attached. Now, how can managers quickly get a grip on these issues and work better with their human resource departments?
One of the biggest issues that faces workforces today, especially those who are in the management front lines, is how do you deal with all the people issues that you end up facing as a result of the changes that have happened in the legal framework that governs the employment of personnel today. There are a few dozen laws that have been created over the last 30 or 40 years that everybody inside of a management team needs to be cognizant of. As a result of that, sometimes people get caught up in the mire of HR law and labor law as opposed to dealing with people directly. So one of the things that is absolutely critical for success when you're thinking about human resource issues is that the way to approach employees is to be very honest and very direct, but very understanding of their issues. The proverbial put yourself in their shoes is probably one of the most important aspects of what it takes to understand the issues the individual is facing before you start making judgment as to what the result is going to be. So listen first, act second.
One of the things I try to tell our clients is every manager needs to be a human resource manager. And you asked how managers can better work with their HR departments. It's to not expect HR to be responsible for the day-to-day communication, coaching, performance management, recognition. Those really are a manager's job, and so many HR functions are not strategic because they're busy putting out the fires of non-HR managers. So my advice to the non-HR world is get a better grip on the day-to-day HR management side of it.
Okay, now, although the job market is saturated, employers are still competitively engaged in the search for the best workers. Are there any easy, inexpensive ways to begin the process of becoming an employer of choice?
One of the things we always preach is there's always a shortage of top talent. We talk about the economy right now that the employer is in the driver's seat, but your best employers to work for never assume they are in the driver's seat in terms of top talent. A very basic first step is to have a why work here statement. Most organizations who sell a product or a service know why the customer should buy their product or their service, their unique value proposition. But do they have a unique value proposition for employees? That's a really powerful place to start, and it's very easy to do. You can survey your most loyal employees and managers and say, why do you work here? What's the best thing about this place? And then put it into a document. And that can roll into a recruitment brochure, which can go on the website. And it's really a building process. So you can start small. These are very powerful things, and very few companies do this.
You know, there's a reputation that is built about the employer in the market at large. You can go into specific geographic regions and ask leaders and just common workers, who are the best employers to work for? And you'll start to discover exactly who those companies are that are most respected in that market. There are themes that all of a sudden start to surface over and over and over again. Do they respect their employees? What's their competitive pay structure? Are they a leader or are they a lagger? What's their benefit structure like? Are they providing good benefits for their employees or are they not? And more importantly, what's it like to work there? What kind of management will you be working under? A bunch of Machiavellian, Attila the Hun type supervisors and managers? Or are you working in a company that really has as their best interest making you a better employee, a better professional, a better worker, as opposed to you're a commodity? That reputation is out there about almost all employers. And that is very easy to build from. If employers would start to think, what's my reputation going to be like in the marketplace? Not today, but tomorrow and 6 months from now and a year from now. And what do I want that to be so that the next time I go out and try and recruit somebody, the word as to who I am is already out there as a result of the way we've built our approach to our employees and their employment with us.
Most HR people and non-HR people don't recognize that everything they do in HR is PR. Even, for example, how they don't hire someone. What's the rejection letter look like? Do they even get one? How do we outplace people who are no longer going to be with our organization? So almost everything you do in HR should be considered PR.
Okay, the quality of an organization depends on the quality of its people and their performance within it. What are some of the best ways for us to improve the quality of our people and their performance?
First and foremost, you find lots and lots of employers who have extremely high turnover rates or have difficulty filling specific positions inside their organization. What we've discovered, and so have quite a number of other researchers, is that one of the things that makes it very easy to bring on good employees is to clearly define what that job is so that you hire to the job specification. And we recommend that you define technical skills and performance skills. First, clearly define what the individual will be doing using technical skills, the job responsibilities they're going to be performing day in and day out. And on the performance skills side, those are the softer skills.
For instance?
Well, are they working with a team? Do they have some degree of attention to detail? Are they in a leadership role and as a result need to be able to communicate well with the rest of the workforce? So clearly define what is essential to the job the individual will be hired for and then hire to that specification. Most organizations say, I need to hire for a job X, and they give you two or three lines and say, you'll know it when you see it. You won't know it when you see it. And every employer who takes the shortcut on defining exactly what that job is typically makes very bad hires to begin with. And as a result, what ends up happening? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year later, they're all of a sudden looking to recruit for that job again because they didn't hire the skill set they had hoped to hire originally. So a little bit of homework up front will go a long way in the long run to ultimately have an extremely higher quality workforce and then obviously better quality service to your customers, better products, so on and so forth.
We've made a lot of reference to employers of choice and best companies to work for. And one reason for that is some of the philosophies that are out there. For example, Southwest Airlines says hire for style, train for skills. I can train you on our reservation system and airport codes, but I can't train you to like people and to have a sense of humor. Another one is hire hard, manage easy. Put the effort in the front end, and you have less effort after you've hired them, which leads to the third philosophy, hire slow, fire fast. You won't be firing people very often if you hire slow. These are very common philosophies, but only in the best companies to work for because they understand that.
Okay, gentlemen, how can we make human resources more than just an administrative function? Can we make it more of a strategic part of an organization?
You know, Dave and I are probably the biggest critics of HR. We've been crying the blues for decades about not being strategic players and strategic partners. One reason for that is that HR was born out of compliance because companies wanted to stay out of trouble legally. Unfortunately, that has created a mindset in the profession where it's easier to say no to everything, but not to come up with any alternatives. So I'm always preaching that we need to go from a compliance to a creative HR mentality. And if we want to become strategic players, we have to have a strategy. And that means coming up with, for example, some of the things we've talked about here, a why work here statement, a recruitment brochure. Dave may want to talk about the idea of success profiles instead of job descriptions. But doing things differently than we've done before is a key component of becoming strategic.
What we advocate are a number of new innovative tools that we've been using over our entire career. Things like a success profile for a position as opposed to a job description. But when you think about human resources, a lot of HR departments have become known as the place that plans the company picnics and does the ombudsman approach to employee problems inside your workforce. I think those days are quickly dissipating as a result of an extremely powerful new workforce of HR professionals who are very, very strong tactically and think very strategically. They have a handle on all the HR tools. There are more than 40 different HR metrics. And as an HR professional, you should be cognizant and competent to do every one of those so that when you're asked, you'll know what's our turnover rate look like, what's our average compensation, what's the average revenue per employee in our workforce, what type of benefits expense do we have to the workforce at large, what the reasons are that the employees have left our workforce as a result of changes. When was the last time we did an employee attitude survey, and what did that tell us about the workforce at large? Those types of metrics, those things that are absolutely essential to the success of an HR professional should be something that everybody in our profession does by rote. And then having those tools is capable of making strategic recommendations on things that need to be done in order to continuously focus on becoming that employer of choice, where you want to be long term. So as John said, the organizations have historically treated HR as the place we're going to go for protection from a labor or employment law perspective. Yes, absolutely. You've got to understand those laws and you've got to understand why those are written to begin with. But one of the things that's critically important is that those organizations that are really blazing new paths forward understand those and have built processes and systems and built a workforce that understand that the most important thing that exists inside of any organization is the people. You can't run it without them. And so what do you do in order to make the people the center of the business? Well, all kinds of programs that really tout the fact that people are the most important aspect of their business.
Okay. So summing up, how do the best companies in America view human resources differently than the others? And can you share some examples of best practices that could be transferable to any organization?
I think the number one thing is values, that the organization knows its values. That would be the why work here, for example. A best practice organization that I always use is a Ritz-Carlton. They have a little pocket card that every employee carries, and they are literally tested on it daily. Their motto is, "We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen." Now, that sounds very simple, but there's power in words, just like in Disney, for example. You're not on duty, you're on stage. You don't have a uniform, you have a costume. You're not an employee, you're a cast member. So when we instill the values in an organization, everything else is easier. And one way, and probably the most powerful way, is in what's now called onboarding. It used to be called new employee orientation. Everybody has been a new employee somewhere, sometime. And when you start your first day, first week on a new job, you're a blank slate, you're ambitious. And if the organization just hands you a manual, sits you in a cubicle, and says, "Let me know if you have any questions," that's not a very powerful meet and greet. We really emphasize that onboarding is not just to teach procedures, it's to instill values. And that first week can make or break the entire relationship.
There are a number of companies that really stand out, the Southwest Airlines of the world, where it's not just getting on a plane and flying from point A to point B. It's almost an adventure sometimes. I've been on a couple Southwest flights where we had such an unbelievable good time. Mostly people didn't want to get off the plane, and it all started from the staff. And as a result of that experience, I prefer to fly Southwest. Why? Because the interaction with the employees was different. It was substantive. So they're not just an airline flying you from point A to point B. They're trying to make your experience with them different. And that's what makes the difference with the really best companies in the United States today from a human resources perspective, because they really do think about the people aspect of their jobs and the fact that everything they do interfaces with people, not only with each other as coworkers, but with the customers.
Right. You know, every department store has merchandise, and then there's Nordstrom. Every amusement park has rides and attractions, and then there's Disney. Every airline has planes, and there's Southwest. You can almost pick one organization out of every industry and say, wow, and the only variable is the people.
We've been speaking to John Puzier and Dave Baker, co-authors of a new book, The Everything HR Kit, published by Amacom and Division of the American Management Association. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Do you understand the complexities of the coming GAAP to IFRS changeover? AMA's new seminar explores these new guidelines by examining actual financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS and comparing the principal differences between them and United States GAAP. By taking this seminar, you will not only become familiar with IFRS, but you will be significantly ahead of the pack when the changeover occurs. For more information, visit amanet.org and type 1238 into the search box. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.